Welcome to Awakening Matters, spiritual dialogues that invite joy, wisdom, and laughter, engaging topics of our humanity from an infinite dimensional perspective, with myself, Cynthia Sloan. And tonight I'm very excited and honored to welcome a very special guest, which I'm going to tell you about in just a moment. I want to invite everyone who is tuning in that you are more than welcome and invited to call in to have comments or questions in the second part of the show, because I want this special, very special guest to have as much time as possible to share not only her beauty but her story. And for those who do want to call in, it is no longer a worldwide number. It is now just for U.S. and Canada, but that number is toll-free, and it's 888-815-9756. And in the United States, 530-327-7602. Feel free to use either of those numbers to call in the second half of the show. And now, with no further interruption, Dr. Catherine Salveson is here with me today. This individual has a master's in nutrition and health education, another master's and PhD in nursing, an associate professor in the OHSU School of Nursing, and that's just her day job, folks. In her prime time, she is completing her yoga teacher certification, and she is a board certified foodie. And I'll let her explain that to you, because it's such a fascinating topic and one that flows from her with much clarity. I'm aware that she is a teacher of nursing and yoga and a fellow of the OHSU Center for Ethics. You know, in what I do, I'm always aware of people who are passionate and who are about making meaning in other people's lives. And that is Dr. Catherine Salveson. And so I welcome you here today with deep gratitude and namaste. And I would like you to share with everyone about really the nursing. Let's start there, wherever you'd like to begin.
Well, thank you, Cynthia, and everyone out there in the radio land who's listening in. I appreciate your joining us, and this invitation is really quite wonderful. Why Cynthia asked me to start with nursing is because I teach nursing, and I have done that now for, gosh, I've been a nurse for over 20 years. But nursing is one of those professions where you go out on the edges of people's lives. And when people go out on their boundaries, whether they're dealing with a heart attack in the intensive care unit or having a baby with a midwife, or you're dealing with a child in a public health clinic to get an immunization, what nurses do is they're with people on their journeys of life. And I like that metaphor, because I try to tell my students that every person you meet is a cosmic project. The universe loves them all, even those that you wouldn't invite home to dinner. But the truth of it is that everyone is born to a unique experience. And what I believe we're here to do is wake up. And some people are born, you know, like the Mississippi River. It is broad and flat and kind of uneventful. And they're born, and then they die. I don't think there's very many people right now having that experience.
No.
I think there's a whole lot more who were sort of born to the East Fork of the Green River that flows into the Colorado, and it is mostly whitewater. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are those who, you know, were born into a genetic disorder. They were born into a troubled family or an abusive experience. They were born into mental illness. I mean, people have lots of big boulders and lots of white water, and they just do their best to get through it. And what your responsibility is as a nurse or a counselor or any kind of therapist is you're in the back of the boat. And you may have your arm on the rudder keeping the boat in the current, but But the person has their oar in the water, and it's their journey. And you may yell out, be careful, there's boulders up there, and you could crash. And they can ignore you, and then the boulder of obesity and hypertension and heart disease knocks them out of the boat. No judgment. You pick them up, put them back in the boat, and say, wow, that was a biggie, and on you go, right? And it's that unconditional regard, that unconditional acceptance of everybody, no matter what, that is at the core of nursing care. And even though good people do bad things, if everybody's doing the best they can all the time, which I believe, even though I look at what they do and I don't think it's very good, and I can look back in my life at some of my prior decisions and think, where was my brain, right? But at the time, I was doing the best I could. But you can always do better, right? Because the river is dynamic and it's always moving. And the other thing that I think people need to remember is that every river on earth is connected. They're like the blood vessels in your body. And you may think you're the only one having your experience, but you're not. Everybody is having everybody's experience. That's what we're learning from string theory and what the reconnection is talking about in terms of the new frequencies, or Larry Dossey is talking about in the new third era of medicine, that really nobody is alone. And the other thing I really like to remind people is we invite people to sort of come out of the cave. You know, I love Plato's analogy that everybody's in the back of the cave looking at the wall. And when the sun shines in, they see all these shadows on the back wall. And they think that's the real world. And then one day, you start to awaken, or you end up in an intensive care unit, or something happens in your life, and you have a boundary experience that causes you to turn around and walk out of that cave. And, oh my God, suddenly the lights go on. And you go, whoa, I had no idea that this was the truth, the real reality, right? Now, some people can become so frightened they turn around and run right back in the cave. Okay? But the goal is to wake up and get out there in the light and invite other people to come out in the light. And that's what the healing experience is all about. It's really about shedding light on people's experience. It's about being in the back of their boat and them knowing that no matter what happens, you won't leave, you'll be there for them, you'll see it through to the end, even if that's death, but that your commitment is unconditional.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's nursing. And anyone who's been well cared for by a nurse knows that. Unfortunately, there's a lot of rivers, not of nurses, that are running into their own boulders, and in a healthcare system that's broken, they're pretty stressed out sometimes. And so they may not be there in that way that we know is the best way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're having their own experience as well. But the profession and the values of the profession are that unconditional acceptance, regard, and commitment to your patient, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is really important about nursing has to do with the fact that the experience of every person is not to be discounted as being connected to everything else. We just had the Portland Marathon here in
mm-hmm.
Portland, Oregon, yesterday or on Sunday, and the race isn't over until the last person crosses the finish line. And so our race against the evil of tobacco and the addiction of nicotine and cigarettes isn't going to be over until the last teenager in Bangladesh quits smoking. At least I can say that as a public health nurse. Right?
Yeah.
Until we get the last soda machine out of an elementary school. No more sugar water for these kids. You know, we have an epidemic of obesity. So the commitment is to the whole population. You know, the work of the Bioneers, a wonderful organization led by a fellow named Kenny Ospelin. You might want to Google it out there, folks. This is a group that's totally committed to this connectedness of all beings. Human beings, animal beings, the plant beings, everybody's in it, and everything's connected. And until the last one is nurtured across their finish line, we're not done. And so that, I think, is really part of our journey, you know, professionally, is to know that on every level, every person is doing the best they can. Sometimes it's not too good. They get into trouble. They have health problems. Terrible things happen. But ultimately, they deserve a total commitment of love and caring, or they won't get better. And Dr. Larry Dossey, a renowned physician who did research on the power of prayer, who is well known in the integrative medicine community, has a brand new book out. And he says he's finally come out of the closet as a doc to really explain the science of intention. Mm. That what you intend has substance. It makes a difference. And there is actually research that's been done where you interview caregivers, mostly these were physicians, about how they felt about their patient and their engagement. I have worked with docs and other healthcare providers who didn't even know the person's real name. It was the kidney and, you know, on the afternoon schedule, or this is my fourth hysterectomy today, mm-hmm. that blonde lady, right? But the truth of it is, what they have verified is that the intention of the caregiver and the involvement in the true experience of their patient makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
Doctors who and nurses who love their patients, who care for them, the work of Bernie Siegel, for example, Love Medicine and Miracles, their very relationship with that person, even if they don't do anything, the relationship is healing, and we can prove it. So I would challenge people, what's it like to be in relationship to you
mm-hmm.
or to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is my intention for, you know, this tired-looking teenager that sold me my groceries when I was coming home from work tonight? What do I feel for her? And I don't have to say anything,
mm-hmm.
but it's like heart math.
Mm-hmm.
I can feel it in my heart and just look at her and intend that she's going to finish her shift and have a really good rest.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what we're coming, we're waking up, we're leaving the cave,
mm-hmm.
and we're waking up to, first of all, that everyone's experience is essential, is a cosmic project that the universe is totally engaged in,
mm-hmm.
is unique mm-hmm. to that person, and is totally connected to every other person's experience. And once we get that, then you become empowered to really love yourself
mm-hmm.
because the more you take good care of yourself, the more you're taking care of everything that ever encounters you and even what doesn't encounter you because it's beyond time and space.
Yes, it is beyond time and space.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I remember when I was a public health nurse, I worked out on the Navajo reservation and I had an elderly woman one time. I was working with her and I was trying to convince her to do some, you know, health promotion. And she looked at me and she said, you know, Catherine, there is no other time than right now. Yesterday is ashes and tomorrow is just a wood pile. Only today does my fire burn.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, you know, Eckhart Tolle talks about the power of now. Mindfulness meditation is all about you only have one moment, and it's this one.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening? How are you radiating? And what has happened to you? What did you have for breakfast? You know, I mean, I would encourage that, like my mother who grew up on a farm in Nebraska, you know, she knew the chicken that laid her egg.
Mm-hmm.
And they laugh in her family that she didn't want to eat any stale eggs, that she would go out to the chicken yard and wait until she could catch one. And it was still soft. That was a fresh egg.
Oh.
So do people know, what have you consumed today? Where did it come from?
Mm-hmm.
Are you paying a couple of extra dollars to do fair trade? Coffee and other commodities that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we supporting the community internationally that's working for clean food? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I would also say, and I'm a vegetarian, I have been for 30 years, but I'm not critical of this. I simply went to a stockyard when I was in my 20s and saw what happens to these animals as they're being butchered to sit in little cellophane containers in a grocery store. That experience is in the meat. Now, if you want to eat meat that's consciously grown and these animals are fed, you know, non-hormone treated or antibiotic saturated food, then enjoy your beef. There's not a lot of that out there, right? So I really encourage people to really wake up to what do you bring into your body? And that has an incredible effect on what do you radiate? And you know, what is the soup that is you?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the soup that you're either cooking up a chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
Half the people in this country are going to die of heart disease if things don't change.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge, right? And it's all preventable. Exercise, good nutrition, stress management, rest. Who hasn't heard that? And yet, half of us will still die of heart disease from uncontrolled risk behaviors. And there's a genetic component, but it can be mitigated, you know. So working toward a normal weight and making it a priority to take a walk or go to the gym or get in the pool and swim, you're not just doing that for yourself. You're doing that for the entire planet, for the whole universe, because as you get out of your period of time of nurturing yourself, with good food, exercise, getting to bed on time, managing your alcohol consumption, trying to quit smoking. You know, I'm a health educator, and those sound like cliches to some people, but they're not. They're building blocks for being an old person.
One that is in a much better mood.
Yes. Yes, they are. And, you know, I mentioned that I'm a yogi, right?
Yes.
And I have been a yogi since the 1970s. And I can't imagine not having yoga in my life. And why I mention that is if you really want to do something for yourself, then pay attention to what the great teachers that we're listening to right now tell us. And they're all saying the same thing. They're all telling us to be still, be quiet. You know, call it meditation, call it reflection, call it stress management. It's the same thing. It's about set aside 10 minutes, 20 minutes, and just go inside yourself and get acquainted. And you may get in there, and like being in the cave coming out into the light, you may go, oh my God, there's too much going on in my head. I can't possibly sit here for 20 minutes. And run back in the cave. That's just fine. But sit down again and again and again. And in yoga, you know, the yoga mat is about the same size as a coffin. And I tell people in my classes that what's going on your yoga mat is practice for how you're going to live the rest of your life. So how flexible are you? Right? How strong are you? How balanced are you? Now, you may get on a mat and you can barely bend over, let alone touch your toes. And God help you if you need to stand on one foot, right? And, you know, if you had to do a push-up, you'd land with your belly on the floor. Well, that's just fine. That's just your boundary. That's where you are. But it's where you start. And if you keep coming back, right, and push on that boundary just a little bit more, push on it just a little bit more, the beauty of the human body is that it's responsive. And guess what? You are more flexible. You are stronger, right? You have more balance. And if it's happening on your mat, it's going to happen in your life. Because what we know is yoga is not about exercise. Ancient yoga is a way of living a balanced, harmonious, happy life. You know, you go see some of these major yogis and, you know, they're hilarious. They are having a great time with their life. Mm-hmm. Happiness is the normal state of being,
mm-hmm.
right? But it has to come from a balanced state of being. And so the yoga that we know in the West came to us as exercise, right? And you can go to a 24-hour fitness or any gym in any major city or small town, and if they've got a yoga class, it's about exercise. But mark my words, if you keep going back and getting on your mat, you can't stand on one foot without concentrating. You can't do a lot of these positions that we put you in without stopping your thinking and thinking about your hamstrings. And what's going on the bottom of my foot, right? So I don't tip over. And you bring the person back inside their body, and oh, what a glorious place. Slowly but surely, they feel their strength, their chi begin mm-hmm. to rise. You know, they find their center. I teach yoga in a domestic violence shelter, and I see women who are spinning. They've been hurt so badly, they don't know where center is. And for just a moment, if they can just, for a very moment, set their body up to be somewhere where they can take a deep breath into their belly and just be there, nowhere else, that's home. That's go home.
Mm-hmm.
That's center. And everyone has it all the time. But we forget to go there.
Yeah.
And we don't practice going there. You know, we don't sit for 10 minutes in the morning before starting our work day and just sit quietly and breathe. Let your angels come and talk to you. Have your intuitions for your day.
Absolutely.
You know, walk out of the cave and say, hello, day. This is going to be either white water or it's going to be a very special time. There was a great Russian philosopher named Gurdjieff, and he's the one that I get this go home first from, because when he escaped from the Tsar in Russia, he wrapped his children in carpets, and they exported them to France, and that's how they escaped. And the story goes, this could be a myth, but I love it, that he started a salon in Paris. And people came from all over to study with him and be with him. And it was a spare room, as the story goes, with one sign on the wall that said, go home first.
Mm.
And I know people that, you know, dealing with their family, dealing with their childhood experiences is the last place they want to go. They want to just go forward, right? But what the story of go home first is until you are at peace within yourself, you're not much good to anybody else. You know, on an airplane, if there's going to be an emergency and they say that the oxygen mask will flop down, what do they tell you?
Yourself first.
Yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in a good position to help somebody else. If you haven't gone home to that place deep in your belly where your breath pushes your diaphragm down and your lungs and the blood pumps over from your heart in these big veins and gets scooped up with all that rich oxygen and pushes it out to your muscles. If you're not going there, you're depriving yourself of a fabulous way to start or end your day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always there. You don't need equipment. You know? I mean, I do yoga in elevators on my way to meetings. I do. I'll lean over and try to, you know, stretch out my back or twist from one side to the other to just loosen up so that I go into this meeting not all tight and rigid from mm-hmm. sitting in front of my computer, but I go in to be with other people in whatever it is you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to come in with my heart open, with my breath deep in my body, calm as I can get, to just be present, to be there now, in that moment, listen, contribute, do the best I can, and when I walk away, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm in the next moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because you've given your fullness to the moment prior.
Right.
There's nothing for you to go back for because
no.
you've left with all of yourself. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other piece I wanted to mention is the perspective that I bring from bioethics. And what that's about is when people do things that we don't understand. I don't really understand what those Taliban teenagers in the mountains of Afghanistan, where are they coming from? Well, you get some insight if you learn about their values. What do they believe in? People will not betray their most sacred beliefs. People are dying for what they believe in, right? So what do you believe in? We should really know that. And most importantly, where did it come from? Did somebody just tell you to believe that when you were a child? That, like my father, if you ever encounter a man who's got black or brown skin, run the other way. They're not safe. He gave me a terrible racist message.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I was an adolescent and I met some boys with brown and black skin, and they were pretty cool, nice people. I had to amend my belief system. So beliefs are dynamic. They're constantly changing.
Mm-hmm.
What an 80-year-old believes or what an 8-year-old believes are going to be a little different. They're developmentally in a different place.
Yeah.
But there's room for both of them. So look, I encourage people, if you really want to understand why you do what you do, especially if you're doing things that you wish were different, you know, I wish I didn't eat so much ice cream every night, or I wish I could get myself off the couch and out the door. I want to exercise, but I don't do it. So why don't I do it? What do I believe that is stopping me? And if you change what you believe, like, I can really do this, and you know, it's really pleasant out there. And in Oregon, in the middle of the winter, when it's dark and rainy in the morning and the evening, it's kind of hard to convince yourself how pleasant it is out there. But it is. The rain is fresh. The trees are happy. Your body is, you know, celebrating, being able to move, and your heart is beating. And yeah, you may just look at your watch and go 10 minutes and turn around and run home and get back on the couch. Hey, that's cool. You got your time in. But it's the intrinsic belief that drives behavior. And there's a wonderful writer named Susan Griffin. She's actually a bit of a poet. And she has a book called Wrestling with the Angel of Democracy.
Mm.
And this book is about what do Americans believe that drives their behavior. And our behavior is to live in a democracy. And supposedly, we believe in each person's right to justice, to beneficence, to confidentiality of their private affairs, to autonomy, to make decisions for themselves. We believe in non-malfeasance, that you do no harm to each other. Do we really believe those things? or not? And do I impose what I believe on you? Mm-hmm. You know? Or do I just give myself permission to believe what I believe to drive my behavior? And if I see you behaving in a way that I completely disagree with, I can probably know that you believe something different than I do. If I believe in a woman's right to choose and be autonomous, if she wants to end a pregnancy with abortion, I can respect the fact that you don't believe that, that you believe that every life is sacred and no one has the right to end it, even if it's in the womb. That's another person's belief. We have coexisted as a country with people on both sides. That's called an ethical dilemma, right? Where both sides feel justified. We have a lot of those. I think we currently have one with the people in the Middle East who share a fundamental difference of values and beliefs and are willing to die for them. How those crunch up against each other right now is pretty violent. My hope is that we can back off that violence and just acknowledge those differences in a way that allows us to live peacefully. It may take a couple of lifetimes, I'm not sure. But so be it. I have that intention, right? So I just hold, whenever I hear people get together in Copenhagen to talk about global warming or, you know, these G8 summits where the leaders of the nations are coming together. Don't underestimate that if you sit and send them the thought that they will listen to each other, they will find common ground, they will protect our beloved mother planet, we'll put a stop to the few among us who see our natural resources and our environment as something to be raped and abused and used up. So, if you watch the news and you just send good thoughts, right? Someone once said in the prior administration that you send light to the darkest places you can imagine. And it was interesting for this person that it was called a White House. But I'm serious. Think of the darkest place that you would never go and send light. That's how we're going to get balanced. That's how the last one among us is going to cross the finish line. That's being in the back of the boat and saying to others, I will not flee. I won't jump ship. I'm here to walk out of the cave with everybody else. Yeah, what we might see out there in the light is a big mess of we've made of things. But it's not a shadow on the wall. It's the truth. And then we roll up our sleeves and we make some other choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we do it different.
Yeah.
But first you got to wake up. And in order to wake up, you got to feel good. And in order to feel good, from my perspective, you get on your mat or you go and do whatever you do to help your body feel whole. You eat clean food.
Well, talk to me about that, because in your introduction, I talked about how you are a board-certified foodie. Explain that.
Well, I am. I'm a big foodie. And a foodie is someone who is totally intrigued by food. And that's me. I love to cook. I probably have every kitchen gadget that's ever been invented. You know, everybody has a hobby.
Uh-huh.
And you spend your spare cash on your hobby. You know, photography or woodworking or, you know, knitting. Well, mine is my kitchen. And as a foodie, I can't eat all that. So the board from which I'm certified is all the dinner parties and the table and the people that I cook for. And it's a lot. I cook all the time. At least once a week, I make something and give it away. And I really pay attention to, how do I feel about this carrot? Where did these lettuce come out of the ground in the glory of these amazing green leaves?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still picking a few tomatoes. It hasn't frozen here in Portland yet.
Right?
I had a tomato plant in my front yard that's taller than me, and I'm 5'8".
Yes, she does. I've seen it.
It's got a lot of tomatoes still on it, right?
It does. Mm-hmm.
And I love that sucker every day when I leave in the morning and every night when I come home. So I just, you know, food is a way. Everybody gets hungry. It's the common denominator. And the thought that we have millions of children who go to bed hungry every night, it breaks my heart,
mm-hmm.
right? That in this country, we have hunger that's growing. The food banks and the pantries, that they're pleading with people for donations,
mm-hmm.
right? Every major holiday, Thanksgiving, Christmas, even Easter, people are touched to connect with each other, and what do? They go to the table.
Yeah.
They eat together. They celebrate together. Food is sacred. We pray over it.
Mm-hmm.
We save it.
Mm-hmm.
We squirrel it away. I've got little bars hidden in my car of fruit and nuts, right? So I just encourage people to be a foodie, right?
Well, I have to say, I have to interrupt you and say, I have had the honor of eating Catherine's food, and it is like a meal that is alive with love and intention, and its taste is beyond fullness. It's like bursting at the seams because it's been so loved, and the love is being returned with every bite. So it's really beyond the experience of just good gourmet food or good prepared food. It's a relationship that you have with your food, an intimate, sacred one, that those who, like myself and others, who are blessed to be able to sit at your table and experience it, it is really a universal relationship that people participate with in what you make.
Well, and you know, we're all doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people get hungry about every 2.5 hours. So what happens when you get hungry? How do you take care of yourself? Well, I believe in portable food. I never go anywhere without a carrot or celery. I like food that doesn't get beat up when I carry it around,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you know that when you get hungry, you're going to run to the closest vending machine or the closest sweet thing or salty, crunchy, fat thing, then you have to protect yourself. I really believe that in this culture right now, there are people who are abusing us because they know that fat and sugar and caffeine are addicting. And we have teenagers who are in their developmental years. Their bones have not yet fused at their joints, and they're drinking these Red Dog drinks that have 5 cups of coffee in 16 ounces of soda pop. My goodness, no wonder these guys can't sleep at night. And they were being marketed for profit, this carbonated, caffeinated sugar water that has addicted an entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really encourage people to really be conscious of what is it that you're being influenced, right? Look at the advertising. Look at what they stock around the where you check out your groceries.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is fresh vegetables?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to see those. You're going to see the candy bars and the convenience food and the high-priced snack food, right?
Right.
You know, 4 ounces of fancy chips for $1.50. For $1.50, you can probably buy 3 or 4 apples. And you can carry them around in your purse and they won't trash your purse.
So you're talking about mindful living in mindful eating, mindful relationship to your environment, just really being in the moment and being mindful of that each moment you go to reach for something, that you are making a choice about not only your present moment, but your connection to everything that is.
And every choice you make is accumulated. It's like skin cancer. People who get skin cancer in their 60s started getting it when they were frying themselves as teenagers to get a dark tan. It accumulates. So every choice you've ever made, you're still making on a cellular memory level.
Absolutely.
And it's going to stick with you, the good choices, until you get to be a really old person. So it's not just for today, right? It's for your experience of
quality.
Yeah, and everywhere you came from and everywhere you're going to go. Because all of the power that ever was or ever will be is here right now. There never was anymore, and there never will be. And it's available and accessible to everyone.
Yes, and the magic is in the moment.
Yeah, and, you know, these wonderful teachers, when they're encouraging us to meditate or to be quiet or to, you know, do Tai Chi or yoga or run or whatever it is they're trying to help us do for our behavior, what they're really trying to do is help us value in a different way. We're not just valuing convenience, right? I put in really long days at the university, and I come home and I go in my kitchen and I look in the crisper and I see which vegetable wants to sacrifice itself on the altar of my dinner. Right? And I look at my spices and think, this cinnamon came from Ceylon. Do I want that? Or how about this cumin from South America? Or here's some wonderful Mexican oregano. Do I put that in my chili relleno with this fabulous cheese that, you know, came from Tillamook, a creamery down on the Oregon coast? And so that experience of putting my dinner together, yeah, I mean, it takes about a half an hour. But if you make sure you have all your ingredients and you come home and you change your out of your work clothes and get in your comfies and go and get ready to nourish yourself and to nourish the people you love, then what you've done is you've turned the page on your day and you're moving into your personal time. And I can literally feel the chi in my body. It settles like dust on a road after a car has driven past. It just slowly drops into my center, into my belly. And it gets quiet, and my sweetheart comes home, and we can spoof around and share our day and have some time together eating a nice meal. And I get to experience the fullness of being a human being.
And that's the key. You said this earlier to me before we got on the phone, which was human being instead of human doing.
That's right. We're humans, but we're here on this planet not to just do things, but to become something. And yeah, we're all going to do things. I mean, I'm the original Energizer Bunny. I've done a lot of things in my life. And I still,
you have.
I have. And I still do a lot of things, right? But I like to think of it that being a human being is like practice session. I have a colleague who was a professional swimmer, and she now coaches, and I can't imagine doing this, but these kids get up at 5:30 in the morning, and they are in the pool by 6:30, and they swim for an hour before they get ready and go to their high school classes at about 8 or 8:30, and they love it. I can't imagine getting in cold water at 6 o'clock in the morning. But the truth of it is, it's a practice session. And they get in and they feel their bodies and they go out on their boundaries and they push their limits and they play and compete with each other. And they are athletes. So I would encourage everyone to think of yourself that every day when you wake up, it's like jumping in the pool. Mm-hmm. And until you go back to sleep, you're in a practice session. You're practicing how to be a human being.
Human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you got lots of boulders in your stream. They're called, you know, snack food, and they're called fatigue, and they're called fear of failure, and they're called low self-image, and all those things that stop you on your way, that knock you out of your boat, that keep your day from being joyful and fun and productive. So, okay, some days you get up and you have a better practice session than others. And by the time you get to the end of it, you're saying, Mios Dios, I am so glad to go to bed. This day needs to end. And guess what? They all do. And you get to get up the next morning and have a brand new practice session.
Yes.
And do it different.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that every day until the last beat of your heart.
Mm-hmm. And every moment, if you choose. Every moment is an opportunity to be mindful that you don't have to wait till the end of the day, that you can claim in that moment of even contemplation, I can choose differently in my next moment.
And you know what? You can also change your mind in the middle of a choice.
Yes, you can.
Yes,
and talk about freedom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we have this very bad habit in my school of nursing. It's called sweet tooth. And people think that bringing in a great big box of donuts in the morning when everybody arrives. Now, granted, everybody's happy, and you make points with the staff and whoever comes by to get one of those. But mark my words, about an hour and a half after you eat a glazed donut, your blood glucose is going to drop after your insulin level comes down from metabolizing all that, and you're going to be pretty tired. And so you go have a cup of coffee. Well, that's going to jack you right back up, but it didn't do anything for your blood sugar. So how about a yogurt?
Right, balance. You're talking
about balance. A little protein,
yeah.
A little fruit, so you will immediately treat yourself and feel better, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be on your defensive, because people who think they're doing good things are tempting you and encouraging you not to do good things. You know, when you're ready to put on your tennis and head out the door to run around for a little while before you head home, I'm one of those people, and more than once, somebody shows up at my door and says, oh, I really need to talk to you. Can you stay and talk to me? Or I've got to get this resolved right now. I know you were going to run, but pay attention to me or pay attention to this. And it's a struggle to say, you know, my shoes are totally demanding to go outside. And they are more demanding than what you need, or this last email, or checking on something.
Mm-hmm.
That's a priority. And if you make it a priority, and you have things that nourish you close at hand, because we're mortal, and we're going to be tempted, and we're going to give in. And more than once, I have picked up one of those donuts, or a cake, or those glorious things, homemade, that are coming in, Christmas coming, and instead of just having one, I'll take three, and I'll eat one, and then I'll put the other two back.
Well, I have to share with you that yesterday I had a moment, one of those moments you're speaking of, where I was with somebody, and when they turned around and looked at me, I was almost pretty much covered from head to toe in hazelnut Nutella chocolate type of this incredible, it's called Nutella, and if you tried it, you know what I'm talking about. But it is this sweet, and it was so good that I found myself just diving into it and found myself there in the middle of it And it just ended up on my fingers, and as I tried to wipe it away, it ended up on my face. And then as I tried to wipe that away, it ended up on my clothes. But it really was a moment of letting go and of being in pure joy with it, and I was, and then cleaning up after and just smiling and being grateful and very full for that moment, too. So, yes, there are moments like that as well.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm a chocoholic. I believe that chocolate is an essential nutrient.
And it, yes, it is.
And
actually,
I've got every chocolate recipe. I have cookbooks of chocolate recipes. So I'm not against eating sweet, wonderful things. But if you're going to eat chocolate, for gosh sakes, don't go after that cheap stuff full of paraffin wax.
No, this was not that. Yeah.
Treat yourself like your Nutella.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to buy a candy bar that costs you $2, then only eat a third of it. And you've got 3 days' worth of chocolate treat that you're going to want. It's usually about 3:30, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's when my chocolate monster comes to visit. And one square or one very delicious piece of something takes care of it.
Absolutely. Catherine, I cannot thank you enough for being the special guest that you are, not only on the show, but on this planet. And thank you for all of your information and your sharing and your story and your perception. I know that myself and others who have participated and are really, really enjoyed it. I can't thank you enough. Now, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, are you open to that, and how can they reach you?
Well, I am open to that, and I would be happy to have them send me an email. Send it to BeWell, BEWELL, one word, at arachnet, like the spider, ARACNET.com.
Okay. You heard how to get a hold of this incredible human being, Dr. Catherine Salveson. And thank you so much for tuning in. I'm so grateful that you have and spent this delicious time with Catherine and myself. And please tune in 2 weeks from tonight for another delicious sharing. And tune into who that special guest will be with myself, Cynthia Sloan. And as always, if it resonates, make it your own.